I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
What do you mean?
11.
Friends don't play.
Stop it! You're freaking her out!
She's freaking me out!
The upside down.
Do you understand what he's talking about?
No.
I found the chocolate pudding!
Oh God, please tell me it's not the kid.
I need you to hide!
Warnings are for coffee and contemplation.
Holy shit.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, an unofficial Stranger Things podcast.
Oh, it feels so good to be home.
Back.
Just settle into this feeling, dudes.
Oh my God. So weird to say that. We are really back. So if you're new to the show, and we can tell that there's a lot of new people, we're glad to have you. The last few episodes you've been listening to are from years ago. I think the most recent was in 2019, because it's been over 3 years since Stranger Things had a new season. Mm-hmm. So thank you for catching up. It might have been weird jumping in on those ones because it was just us making terribly wrong predictions about the upcoming seasons and not even really recapping as advertised, but just kind of reminiscing about the stuff we assumed everybody had just heard. But that's what we do. We break down every single episode of Stranger Things. And in the off seasons, we talk about a plethora of other popular films and TV shows that we're interested in. So we hope that you stick around when Stranger Things 4 is over. But we don't need to talk about that yet. We're about a week away, as you listen to this, a few days away from the first half of Stranger Things 4. We now know a lot more things, so we'll get into that here shortly about what's going to be coming up. So this episode, what we're going to do, talk about the first three seasons, reminisce again, recap a little bit, bring up some of our favorite moments, our experience rewatching the first three seasons, because all three of us here have just done that, and then make some predictions, because we don't learn our lesson, about what Stranger Things 4 might entail.
We shouldn't be in the prediction business, but we are. We're opening up shop, we're welcoming all customers, and we're not providing a good service.
No, we're about as accurate as, you know, your random psychic at, you know, like a flea market or something.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the best one is still like, we all know who the American is, right? That's being held by the Russians. Let's all say it on three. One, two, three. Dr. Brenner.
Here's the thing, though.
I actually still stand by that. But
we'll probably get to that in a little bit. But yeah, Andy and I were talking about it. So for listeners that don't know, we all three had predicted that the American, the stinger at the end of season three, was Dr. Brenner, right? And now it's supposedly obvious that it is Hopper because he's in a Russian prison in the show, right? Andy and I think it is very possible that we were originally correct and that the letting everyone know Hopper's still alive and well and in Russia in the interim of the season is kind of a red herring, letting them know that that prisoner, you know, making it so that that prisoner being Dr. Brenner is still a reveal. That's still possible. Mm-hmm. You follow me there, Steve?
Yeah, well, I mean, all cards on the table. Anything's possible, baby.
Anything's possible in the world.
When it comes to Dr. Brenner, that guy, he's a slippery one. He's a slippery guy.
He is a slippery one. He does stop into our show and talk from time to time. He may join us today. We don't know. We never know when he's coming by. He does what he wants.
He's a busy man.
He's the head of the lab. We don't know what his position is or how he got that or anything about him.
Yeah. If you look at his LinkedIn, it just says head of the lab.
Six connections.
Assistant to the regional manager.
But yeah, if you want to email the show, please do that. We love hearing from our listeners. You can write in at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com. I think we have a very special listener email to read out today. One of our favorite listeners from the very beginning, our early adopter, Stephen the Fifth.
Well, it's actually a voicemail.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's a voicemail.
How can you leave a voicemail?
By getting your phones out. Uh-huh. If you're in the continental US.
Sure.
It's not an international number. Andy, you're going to have to tell me it was 859-757-4051. So without further ado, let's listen to the message that Stephen V sent us.
Hey guys, this is Stephen V. Anyway, I was listening to the old recaps and two things. First thing, I sound like a complete creep in all the shout outs. Yeah, super creepy, but I did marry the woman who I shouted out. So that worked out pretty well. And we've been married for like 2.5 years. That's how long it's been. So yeah, that worked out. Second thing, the theories aren't always great in the recaps, but the last season, I think, Chris was pretty spot on about, Eleven's bite and how maybe there's like a psychic connection before the gate closed. And now it potentially has the power to open portals. But you said it would need to be like a sentient creature. And this season it looks like we're going to have one. So yeah, maybe Vecna opens portals. I don't know. But super excited. About like a week to go. So that's cool. And I can't wait. Can't wait to hear you guys talk about it. Talk to you later.
Stephen V. Wow. So for those who don't know, he left us, I think it was a voicemail back then even, wasn't it? Or was it an email?
It was an email. We didn't have voicemail back then.
That's right. It was before voicemails were invented. So years and years ago, he had written into the show to have a shout out for his girlfriend at the time. And we did the shout out. And they got married, not because of the show. We're not going to take that pressure on.
You know, I'm not going to say it's not because of the show, though.
We don't know.
It could have been.
At least like 8%.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. To have an exact percentage, I would probably go with 8.
Is he the one that threw out a ha ha, will you marry me? Is that the email that we're talking about?
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. And now they're married. He also won one of our contests. So I would like to say maybe that helped him buy the engagement ring.
Yeah, absolutely. We sell those on Amazon, right?
Yeah.
The $100 Amazon gift card. Is that what he won?
I think it was Fitty Bones.
Fitty Bones. Fitty Bones. That's right. Fitty Bones.
So yeah. Don't tell him we did 100 later on. Did we do that?
No.
Was that the fake contest we did where nobody entered and we just stopped it?
I can neither confirm nor deny.
It might have been 100. Yeah, you guys screwed that up.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome, really, man. And more importantly, congratulations to me for apparently making correct predictions.
Yes, sir. Congratulations.
I didn't even remember those predictions.
Me either, man. I need to go back and listen to the show.
Congratulations. It's a big deal for you.
Apparently it was spot on. Wow. Awesome. But also cool for Steven. Yeah, if you want to, you know, be a part of this kind of relationship with us, you can email streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Patreon. Subscribe at a variety of tiers for a variety of rewards, including becoming a producer of the show. Mm-hmm. We'll read your name in the credits at the end. We'll do a lot of fun stuff and funny voices and have a good time for that. So
yeah, keep a lookout. The credits are now at the end and we're going to have a lot of fun with them. So if you look forward to that, stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned for sure. But also at, you know, the $5 tier and above, you get extra content. We publish extra episodes every month. The more Patreon subscribers we get, the more content we'll do on the side for the Patreon feed.
And boy, this month is going to be a great content month for Patreon members. So not only are we going to be putting on our reviews of Top Gun Maverick and Obi-Wan Kenobi on the timed exclusive Patreon page, but the main event for all you Stranger Things fans is I'm putting together a little bit of a Stranger Things trivia game for these two jabronis. Mm. And
don't be humble. If you don't know, if you haven't experienced Steve's trivia game capabilities. He goes all out.
And I am just going to, I'm gonna draw a line in the sand right now. I'm
okay.
Throw it on the gauntlet.
Wow, Andy's sandbox is ruined. There's a line in it.
Yep. Shit. Sorry, buddy. Sorry about that. But no, this trivia game is the most ambitious, insane, largest trivia game I've ever put together. It's going to be amazing. Thank you to everyone who has helped me cultivate this game by completing the survey that I put out online. So thank you to that. But if you want to listen to that, become a $5 or more subscriber on Patreon and you can listen to this amazing show that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's good. I'm super excited. So for those of you who don't know, we all took off work this weekend. It's a 4-day bonanza because we're going to go see Top Gun Maverick that night. Then come home. I think that's what we're doing. We haven't even talked about it in a while. But then we got a few hours to kill. We're going to do the Top Gun episode, put that on the Patreon feed. And then at the same time of Stranger Things dropping, Kenobi's dropping, which is a huge deal. I mean, Hayden Christensen's back. Ewan McGregor's back. This is going to be an incredible event. So we didn't want
to... Camille Nanjiani's in it.
Yeah.
Really? That's cool.
Yeah. We didn't want to clog the timeline of our Stranger Things stuff. So we're going to put all that stuff on the Patreon feed. So we will be watching Kenobi and everything too. So.
And if you can't throw us a few bones, we totally understand. Those episodes will eventually go on the main feed, but it might be a while.
Yeah, it'll probably be a little while, but we'll put those on the main feed in a few weeks or a month's time. So that's what's happening. You can follow us on Twitter at StreamThingPod. We don't monitor that as you think we would per se, but we do see it. We just don't put a lot of effort into that. I'm just throwing that out there because when they see it, they're like, hey, this is pretty bare bones.
Just being honest with you guys.
Yeah, I'm just keeping it real so you're not disappointed. Expectations low.
Keeping it 100.
You can also follow me on TikTok at MoviesAreTherapy. And then we got an extra special game here. We're going to try this on for size. We're going to start doing Mad Libs. Okay. You guys know what Mad Libs are? You Gen Zers might not know.
I mean, I assume everyone's going on a road trip with your family and you all have the provincial Mad Libs book that you guys fill out while you're driving on the road for a long time. At least that's what my family did. That's
dangerous and irresponsible, Stephen.
Yeah. What the hell?
Eyes on the road.
Eyes on the road. Don't be thinking about verbs. The person driving isn't filling this sheet out. All they have to do is throw out a number.
Give me an out.
Car crash. So what? This isn't just normal Mad Libs that will cause your car to crash, but it is a Stranger Things themed Mad Libs.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the episode, I'm going to ask these guys for, you know, the numbers, the nouns, the adjectives, all that fun stuff. And then at the end of the show, we will reveal the story that they have crafted using their own words. So the Mad Libs for today is titled Hawkins Middle AV Club.
Ooh, AV Club.
Oh, sweet. All right, I need a number.
7.
Part of the body, plural.
Phalanges.
I have to spell phalanges. Noun.
Flower.
Noun.
Tire.
Verb ending in ing.
Squirting.
Ew.
Gross.
Plural noun.
Wheelbarrows.
Wheelbarrows?
Yes, sir.
Wow, I like that one. Letter of the alphabet.
Z.
Verb. Cry. Number.
11.
Nice.
I see what you did there.
That's a Stranger Things version of 69. Anytime you say 11, it's nice.
Nice.
Noun.
Table.
Person in the room.
Andrew.
Adjective.
Plentiful.
Plural noun.
Oh my God, crayons.
I love crayons. Verb ending in ing.
Switching.
Question mark?
I was like, is that a part? Why?
To switch. Plural noun.
Plural noun. Wolves.
Adjective.
Colorful.
First name.
Steven.
And last but not least.
A long one.
A place.
A place. Oh, God.
Purgatory. It's going to be a good one.
All right.
Stay tuned to the end of the episode to see what the story is that they have just created with their words.
With the Hawkins AV Club. So we all just rewatched all three of the Stranger Things seasons. Not for the first time. We do this every time a new season comes out. But it's the first time that all of us have rewatched season 3, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's my second run through. It's my third season 3.
I think I saw a couple episodes because my son started watching it after, you know, we did our show. But yeah, so it pretty much definitely the freshest for me. What was your all's experience revisiting the show? Because it's probably been a good 3 years in being back, watching the show again. Any extra perspectives on earlier seasons or a new ranking, perhaps?
No new ranking. I will stand by what I said in years ago that I do believe season 3 is the best season of Stranger Things. So for me, it's 3-1-2 still. It was crazy to me how little I remembered. I was like, watching season 3.
Oh,
like,
season 3.
Well, of all of it. Well, season 1 is like in my bones, but 2 and 3 had been a hot minute. Like, I hadn't watched them since we did the shows. It was interesting because it was things like, oh my God, I forgot that Billy has his huge arc in season 3 that like he gets mind flayed and is, you know, a body snatcher and stuff. And like, I guess we should obviously say that spoilers for the first 3 seasons, but.
Oh, that's assumed.
No, that's assumed. Yeah. If you made it this far and you were like, what happened in season 3? I have not caught up yet.
But yeah, dude. So like, there was so much coming at me. I was like, I remember 4th of July. I remember the mall and I remember the wonderful sing-along with Dustin and Susie. And then the rest I just blanked on, like, forgot that Alexi was a person. And
oh, how could you forget about Alexi?
I did, man.
He's a very dangerous child murderer.
Smirnoff. But season 2 was better than I remembered. In my memory, it was kind of a sophomoric slump. And that Lost Sister episode truly is awful. I could not believe in that. There's like a thing where they're asking, oh, did you sing the baby to sleep? Did you sing her lullaby? Old MacDonald had a farm. And then like the whole gang is like, E-I-E-I-O, right, guys? Isn't that funny? I'm like, oh my God. Like, there's something going on.
You're telling me you've never jovially sang Old MacDonald with your friends? That's something that all real human people do.
That's true.
Especially in the 80s, man.
That was a bop in the 80s.
Especially the Lost Boys. But anyway, just that one episode is a bummer. And what otherwise, ultimately, what in my mind, the season 2 was like pretty good, but it's actually great. It has some issues. Every season has some issues. That one has more than most, but I actually enjoy season 2 more this time than I had ever. So that was pretty great.
What about you, Steve? Do you have any like different perspectives on anything, or what was your experience like in general?
Yeah, so I think my ranking holds true. I just think season 1 is just almost as perfect of a TV show as you can get. However, watching it this time, I was like, dude, season 3 is so goddamn good. The reason why I can't put it above number 1 is that I feel like season 2 has the worst valley of any of the 3, and that's the Adventures in Chicago episode, whatever you want to call it.
I think it's Pittsburgh.
I thought it was Chicago. Pittsburgh's where they start off in episode 1 of season 2, but I think she meets him up in Chicago because Chicago's closer to Indiana. Oh,
did they like road trip to Pittsburgh to kill the guy?
Yeah, because they're going around trying to find the different dudes.
Okay.
But you're right. The opening of season 2, they're in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that, but like that is the deepest valley, right, of all 3 shows. However, I think season 3 has more valleys than any of the other seasons. But it has the most incredibly high peaks. Mm-hmm. It's a very lopsided season. Like last time we reviewed it, I remember thinking that season 3 like didn't get me until episode 4. I was kind of like, I don't really like this.
I just listened to the episode where we covered it and you were saying that.
Yeah, and then the sauna test hits. I'm like, yeah. But this time around, I didn't feel that. I was just like, yeah, this is great. I'm into it. But I still think that Joyce and Hopper's storyline, definitely in the first half through middle of that season, is poorly executed in terms of, I think they're acting way too manic, especially Hopper. It just didn't seem quite true to the character. Like, and maybe that's a small thing, but it was just kind of one of those things that kind of took me out of the experience overall. But overall, the season's fantastic. Like the last half of that season is so front loaded with my favorite things about Stranger Things. You get this core group of characters that are so fun. You get them together. They're working together. They're fighting giant monsters in an 80s mall. What's there more to love? The other kind of things that I kind of found out in my rewatch that I didn't experience the first several times I've watched the show is I found myself gravitating towards characters that I didn't necessarily gravitate towards before. Like, I've always loved Winona Ryder in the show, but this most recent rewatch, for the most part, like anytime, especially the first two seasons, like whenever Joyce is on screen, I'm like, I always like would lean forward,
sit
like,
up,
here's Joyce, I'm ready to go. Because, you know, we all know how much we love Noah Schnapp on the show. He's a powerhouse of a little kid actor, you know. But when Joyce gets on there, it's like Winona Ryder, I'm like, gosh, she is crushing it. She's funny. She's just amazing in the show. And then also, previously we would kind of poke fun at the Wheelers, you know, at their parenting prowess. This time watching through, I'm like, Karen's trying her goddamn best. Karen is, she's just this nice person who's like just in a really awful marriage that she can do better than. And I was so much more sympathetic. Hey,
we respect Ted in this house, sir.
Oh, fucking Ted. Oh, my language. So, yeah, those are my kind of brand new takeaways in the most recent rewatch that I found myself kind of enjoying. Chris, what about yourself?
I mean, pretty much, I don't remember, and I'm the one that asked the fucking question, but I don't remember what I did or did not notice the first couple times we did this, right? So there's that. I think we were always sympathetic to Karen, but that's another thing that hit me on my rewatch of season one specifically. Like, she tries very hard to be accessible and open to both her kids, and she notices that things are going on and they won't let her in, and they can't really. We know. Mm-hmm. But especially to Nancy. And she's, you know, just very hurt that she can see her kids are going through pain that she knows she can't do anything about. Mm-hmm. And there isn't, we probably talked about this at the time, but they make it very clear that she doesn't love Ted.
Yeah.
And, never did. And that it was just kind of a, you know, I think I glossed over that at the time and saw it more from Nancy's perspective about how she didn't want to become that. But this time through, I really felt for Karen, you know, and I made jokes in the past about her like banging Billy and shit. Right. But this time through, I was just like, you know, wow, she really needs to get away and do something, you know. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about way too adult things, like divorce was highly stigmatized still in the 80s. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. Like, that's what I was thinking of. I'm getting so old. Yeah. But also, I remember thinking that Winona Ryder's performance in season one was stellar, but also really amped up, right, and hysterical, and I made fun of it a lot. But
my boy, she says, "My boy, says
my boy." She's talking about her homies back in the city where she's from. If my boys were here, that's not what she's saying. But at the time, my son was a toddler, and now he's almost 9, and I saw zero overreactions at any point throughout season one. If anything, she was handling it really fucking well. You know what I mean?
I still love that scene when she goes to work and she's like, "You're giving me a notice. You're giving me a new phone. You're giving me a pack of smokes. Damn it,
Camels.
Give me them Camels." Like, yeah, fuck, dude. Her kid's missing. You son of a bitch.
I love that. She's like, "I haven't missed a day in 7 years. Suck my balls,
right?" You know?
And he's like, "Oh yeah, for sure." Yeah, so that's one thing that hit me this time around. I have to say, a lot more of the flaws of the writing came to the surface this rewatch, like you guys are saying. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I forgave them more too, if that makes any sense. I've said it a bunch in public and on here, I think, but we're all aware that the Duffers had, you know, all over a decade to work on season one and then less than a year to write the script for season two, which is a season they didn't plan on making, didn't know was going to happen. The show is originally supposed to be an anthology show, like kind of like extended Black Mirror episodes with different characters and actors each season. And so they kind of pulled season two out of their ass. And so a lot of it is sequel tropes of trying to hit the same beats, but harder. And you can just see it, you know, if you are familiar with screenwriting at all, you can just see them trying to hit the same notes. They do it again in season three in a weird way a bunch of times, but specifically there's a weird scene. It actually hit me kind of weird. In season two, Murray Bauman is like a matchmaker for Jonathan and Nancy. Mm-hmm. And they're in high school. So that's kind of like, again, I'm getting old. So I was like watching it this time. He's like, "Y'all should just fuck. I got you drunk," and goes upstairs. And I'm like, Bro, what are they, 17? Like,
so, Jonathan, how was the pull out?
Wow.
Dude, that's exactly the weirdest fucking thing.
Exactly.
It's a fucking pull out joke.
Jesus, I was like, this is Christ. Weird, right? But they used the Murray as matchmaker joke for Hop and Joyce in season 3 in the car. Mm-hmm. And it still works. It's still funny, mostly because Alexi's there, like, even though he supposedly doesn't understand anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, that just stuff like that. I'm like, you don't have to do that, you know? But I honestly liked the Lost Sister episode more this time around. Episode 7 of season 2, the famed terrible episode. The only episode that's kind of hard to get through. Mm-hmm. And I was like dreading it. So I binged.
Yeah, you messaged us like, I'm just going to stop before I have to watch this.
Yeah, when I got to season 2, I watched the first 6 in one day and then took a few days off because I was like, oh my God. But then when I got to it, it wasn't that bad. And here's why. I know why they did it. And my opinion is that the episode itself isn't that bad. I know Andy took some like specific issues with the execution. And that little team of comic book ne'er-do-wells is a little strange. You know, like he's the muscle and like he's got like the ponytail thing. I think there's a specific word for what that is. But Q, maybe? I think it's just a Q.
A Q?
Like his whole head is shaved except for that.
A little rat tail thing?
It's a Q. But anyway... It's a weird group of characters, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. But like they needed Eleven to confront her identity. They needed to have her find her mother. Mm-hmm. They needed to have her. They tried to open this plot line of where are her kind? There are others like her. And I think the weirdest part about that episode is that it hasn't come back yet. And I think that'll be fixed in season 4. I fully expect to see 8 again. If we don't see Kali in season 4, I will be shocked.
We had this discussion at some point, but I really want them to bring that crew back at some point because I want that episode to mean something. Like I know I just called it a valley earlier on, but I really honestly don't think it's as bad as a lot of people claim for it to be. I think it's a perfectly fine episode. The reason it's a valley is merely its placement in the season. I think favors.
It fucks with the pacing for sure.
Because there's
the actual heart of it, like the reason it's there, I like, you know?
Because the episode before it is the whole ramping up of, oh no, the demo dogs, they're about to break free and kill all your favorite characters who are in one spot in Hawkins. Meanwhile, in Chicago, 11 finds friends.
Yeah.
And you have to wait a whole hour to figure out like what happens to that kind of cliffhanger of an ending for the episode prior.
Yeah.
And so I understand why people are like, what the fuck? I don't care. Go back to that. That's exciting. So, and I don't know how you solve that because I don't know where you could put that episode.
They could have cross-cut two episodes with each other and probably had better pacing.
Yeah,
instead
probably.
Of trying to make like, I know it's not a bottle episode, but trying to make it like that. Mm-hmm.
They sort of try to address it by having her like, you know, do a little peek, see what Hopper's up to. Yeah. And he's like, they're all going to die. Like standing at the radar thing with the dude. But like they didn't do enough with it to maintain the pace that they had up to that point. And it's just. A poor acting all around. It's just like the Cali Capers for 50 minutes in the middle of this.
Cali Capers.
It reminds me of a subpar Disney Plus Marvel TV show, which is most of them, where it's like, that was fine. Mm-hmm. But when we see Kali show up later, having watched that, we're going to be like, fuck, yes! Yeah. Like we cared the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, like of all those characters that are introduced in the episode, Kali is the strongest one. Like she's definitely like, if any of those people came back, like I don't mind if none of them come back except for Kali. I'm interested in her story. I want to see more of her power.
She's the only one activity. That matters. Yeah. I have no illusions about that.
Right, but like if they all come rolling up and their van again. In season 4, she can come rolling up in her van and like a whole cast of 6 different characters could pop out of that van and I wouldn't know. I'm like, oh yeah, they were in that episode. Yeah.
I would expect that she will die. I know we're not in predictions yet, but I think that she...
I'm coming in hot. Let me write that down. Kali dying.
She's not irredeemable to me because I am very allowing of people's flaws, but I think... Writing wise, it makes sense as not a foil to Eleven, but as a, I don't know what the word is, another example of how Eleven's trauma and rage,
the darker side of Eleven,
could be poorly channeled into actions like the life of Kali. And I think that Kali will pay the price ultimately for that. Get an arc and die in a way that is like everyone else. clutch sacrifice. but yeah, I think her having, you know, spent her last 10 years going around the country murdering her oppressors might just to stand out as a writing example of, you know, a road 11 best not go down. I think she's going to bite the bullet, if that makes sense. I know it was a for long sure. way of saying that.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
But like if I was writing it, that would make sense to me. You know, like, oh, okay.
I would expect her to get nabbed and tortured and tested upon and used in some regard. I wouldn't expect any kind of arc. Maybe some kind of moment of sacrifice, but I wouldn't expect her to have enough screen time for it to be something like that.
Do you think, I think she'll die at the hands of the Night King, the
the new baddie,
which we
actually
not supposed to talk about yet. Actually, yeah, my bad. I was just accidentally thinking of Game of Thrones. We're going to try to put a spoiler bumper before we discuss the trailer, or I don't know if you know this, but Netflix released the first 8 minutes of episode one of Stranger Things 4, and we did watch it, and we're going to discuss that as well. But we're going to put a spoiler bumper before all that. But what were you saying, Andy? Are you allowed to say it?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but I would just say that, like, I would expect her to come back, and I would not think in a big capacity, but she is too important to the background of their protagonist to not bring her back in some capacity.
Right.
I think that they're probably aware of, they seem to write in a way that acknowledges community theories and community engagement. So, like, the big side thing in season two was very much a justice for Barb. It's like, oh, well, you know, the parents are trying to find out what happened to her, and now Nancy's on the case and all of that. It seems like
part of the plot was just a reaction to hashtag justice for Barb, mm-hmm. for sure.
And so I think that they know that the Lost Sister has the reputation of being the one bad episode. And so I think that they would try to underplay that.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. That's fair. But I don't think that's Kali's fault. I don't think they know.
Oh, no.
I don't think
they
think that either,
though. The acting was totally fine. I think it was just direction. Like, it makes sense for her to be like, hey, I've been doing this for a while. I actually can help you channel your skills. And it's not just, you know, your powers, but use your rage or whatever. But they just did her dirty. And we got like a 30-second Yoda moment of like, try to move the train. All right, cool. You did it. You're good to go.
Yeah, let's go do this.
Like, what? What?
Roll out, we will. I can be your backpack while we run. Any hoozle. I have a question for you guys before I want to ask you two things. I didn't prep them for this at all, listeners. So this is actually unprofessional because typically.
Ooh, you coming at me hot?
It'll be a better discussion if
with
you prep.
These gotcha questions.
Gotcha. Who do you think is the most heartbreaking death? Again, spoilers for the first three seasons. So correct me if I'm missing one, but I'm going to put on here Alexi, Benny, Barb, Bob, and Billy.
The B's and the A.
Yes. Andy, I'll ask you first.
Hang on. Okay, Bob newbie. Okay, I was like, hang on, who?
Well, we know it's not Bob because he fucking forgot him.
Bob's fucking name. I have a two-part answer to that. The one that...
Don't cheat.
I care most about, like, I like the character and I'm sad that they're gone, is Bob newbie. I think that it was basically an opportunity for Joyce to start to have a normal life, and she was really truly experiencing that, and then we lost him, and he was just sort of out of his element but down to help the entire time. And so, like, I loved him for that. But in as far as, like, in the moment during the scene, which one is the most heartbreaking, it's got to be Billy. Seeing when he's going to feed 11 to the mind flayer monster thing, and she confronts him, or she talks him out of his, you know, spell or whatever, talking about his mother. And I just think that the acting that he pulled off there was phenomenal. Like, he is like a rage monster, like from 28 Days Later, and then kind of pulls it back and starts to cry and nod a little bit to the thing she's saying. And then the way that they went about his death was the most impactful. So in that way, it's the most heartbreaking to me.
Okay. Steve, what do you think?
Bob newbie with a bullet. Just because
it's Sean Astin, so automatically you're attached to him. And like what Andy said, just his story with Joyce, you're rooting for the guy. He's just a swell, nice dude. He's trying his best. And when I was doing the rewatch, I was kind of realizing, you know, Bob had no idea that there was anything crazy or, you know, out of the ordinary. Paranormal. There's nothing supernatural, paranormal going on. Like, you know, he knew Will got lost in the woods a year ago, you know?
Yeah.
And he doesn't know that anything's out of the ordinary until literally maybe like, what, 3 hours before he's brutally torn apart by monsters.
He handles it really well.
And he's like, what's going on? Why are we?
You told me this was a very strange family.
He solves this puzzle. He's like, why am I solving this puzzle? And just like, no questions, Bob. And, but he solves it. He goes on this
adventure. He's like, all right, she's got that fire. I'm just going to keep doing this, I guess.
He's like, I may not have two pythons, but I certainly know how to speak Python. So I'm going to go and figure this out. And, you know, and just the way he's willing to just, he's fucking ride or die for Joyce and the buyers. You know what I mean? And so when he dies, he dies so brutally, it's like, oh shit. Like that hurts.
It was painful.
Bill, I think is like a great death scene in Daycare Montgomery is, you know, we call him
Daycare.
you know, his acting is phenomenal, but he started off as such an irredeemable character in all of season two. And then, you get some of the backstory and you're like, oh, I mean, I sympathize with him, but also like that dude was going to murder someone on his own eventually. So when he dies, it's like, oh, I'm glad he was able to redeem himself, but also like, eh? So Bob Newby,
that's a fair answer. And that was almost my answer, because in that scene in season two, you have to watch Samwise Gamgee get ripped apart. Right. By the fucking monkeys from Wizard of Oz, you know, and it's terrifying. But I have to go with Billy. I think Billy is the most heartbreaking, not because of how it's shot, which is it's shot beautifully. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a very, again, I'm really allowing of flaws. And to me, in my mind, Bob Newby was in his late 40s, maybe early 40s. You know, he lived a good life. He was Bob the Brain. Not a long life. I'm not saying it's okay.
As someone creeping towards 40, I'm like, yeah, I do have a good life.
Finally got laid and now it's all over.
I'm going to contrast it with Billy, who up until he was happy from, you know, up until he was seven or so, and then abused brutally until he died horribly. After being stuck in his body, watching himself murder people and stuff, right? And I think in the sauna, you get to see the real Billy, you know? And I think they do a good job of kind of undoing the image that he had in season two. They did show some of why he was the way he was in season two when that interaction with his father. But what you don't get to see is that he actually does care, even in spite of all that abuse. And in season three, you know, he looks at Max and he's like, I'm sorry. You know, and you can see on Max's face that there is a kinship there. She does love her brother. That's her brother. You know what I mean? And so you can kind of fill in the blanks of all the maybe small good interactions that they have had. And so it's just really sad to me that he, even though he got quote unquote redeemed as someone who was a complete asshole in high school, I sympathize greatly with Billy because he died at what, 18?
Yeah.
He never got an opportunity to fucking finish growing out his frontal lobe and learn some things about life and
tragic, horrifying life. And then he died. Like, yeah. Pretty awful.
That's my take on it. I think it's very, very sad that he never got to grow beyond that and soften up and make amends and, you know, learn what life's really about. He has no idea.
I won't change my answer. Barb.
Justice for Barb, my guy.
Even Billy, or Benny, sorry, Benny.
Benny, yeah.
It's very brief, but that's a horrible, like, they do a great job of showing you, like, what a good guy he is. And then later I caught it on the rewatch, you know, Hop's like, that's my friend, you know, and you can just picture him and Hop hanging slinging out some beers, and that would be fucking awesome to watch.
They did look like they would have been bros.
Yeah.
We were robbed of seeing Hop housing some Benny's Burgers with Benny.
I want to see the prequel with sad alcoholic Hopper hanging out with Benny. Yeah, Benny Hop.
I love it.
Benny Hoppers. That's a... Any restaurant joke, I guess. Yeah. Any hoozle. So that's the our take on the most heartbreaking deaths. And then again, I didn't prep you guys, but anything stand out as some of your, just pick a couple, maybe favorite moments of any of the first three seasons. I'll start you off. I got a couple small ones that I know I loved the first time around, but sitting and watching it with my wife, who remembered nothing about the show. She'd only seen each season once. So this was really fun to kind of watch it through her eyes. One of my favorite moments, and this is why season three is arguably the best. I think season one is the best written, and that's my favorite. But season three, you could make a strong case for it because it is more fun. Mm-hmm. It's got some of the highest highs, like Steve was saying. I do still think two has the lowest lows, but I'm still with you. But there's a small moment where they're running from the Terminator in season three, and Hopper gets in the back of the car with Alexi, and Joyce is fumbling the keys and Topper just screams drive. And it's, I don't know why it's so fucking funny, but it is. And like the comedic timing of it. That's one of my, it sounds so dumb, but that is one of my favorite moments of the whole show and why I love the character of Hopper so much.
It's funny because they cut him in mid scream. Like there's a cut. He's like, drive. And then it cuts. To
yeah.
Like
that's all you need, you know? And it just, the look on his face, my wife was cackling like in that, like again, through her eyes, I was like, this is a really good moment. This works. And then of course my favorite moment bar none is actually I found out on TikTok when I posted the clip of it and talked about it, a divisive moment. Apparently a lot of people hate this moment, the scene with Susie where they're singing Never Ending Story.
Hate that moment.
Oh yeah, I got a ton of comments. Like, yeah, this is where the show died.
Oh no.
It's only people who have cold black hearts and are dead inside that hate it.
Yeah, I mean, those people need to die horrible deaths.
No, for sure. Well,
I don't know about that.
No,
so the argument is, just so you know, it's dumb, it's wrong, but the argument is, it's totally wrong and off. These same people probably hate random musical numbers in long-running TV shows in like the seventh season, which are my favorite thing ever. But anyway, totally inconsistent. And this is really dumb. Hopper would be okay and not in the pickle he's in had Susie given them the code immediately. None of the bad things would have happened. I don't know if they know how conflict in shows works, but yeah, they are a result of decisions made by characters. And without them, you have no show.
Where the concept of dramatic ironies is he didn't know anything that was going on and just finally is hearing from a boyfriend who she thought ghosted her.
Right. But anyway, yeah, that's my favorite moment.
That is the best moment in all of Stranger Things. It's not just a favorite moment on a rewatch. The entire rewatch was all leading up to that moment, and it was every bit as wonderful as I remembered it to be. And I got chills because it's so much fun. Like, there's so much going on. They do such a good job, especially in season three, of everybody's doing something important in a different place, and it ties together wonderfully. And so I think that the writing there is just absolutely phenomenal. But that moment just culminates everything, and it's so fucking goofy, and I love it for that. Just like the kid Robin and Steve all beating the shit and sitting in the back of the car, the demo monster is chasing them, and we're listening to Never Ending Story duet. It's wonderful.
The part that kills me is Murray Bauman turning around looking over his shoulder.
Baldy.
That's when I lose it.
Yeah, that part is so good. I love it. And then I'm almost certain that I would have talked about it in talking about season one, but the little maternal moment that Joyce has with Eleven when they're doing the salt bath before she does that. And it's just like, it's the first moment of parental warmth that Eleven ever has in her life, I think. And that was just really impactful. And maybe that's just me projecting, but I love that moment. And, it stood out to me again on the rewatch this time.
Steve, anything you want to highlight? Some extra favorite moments?
Yeah, I've talked about the scene before, but it's one of my favorites. I love the scene when Robin comes out to Steve in the bathroom.
I was going
to
bring that up as a dark horse.
Not only because like leading up to Iggy, they have such great chemistry on screen together. So like you instantly buy that they're good friends, right? Yeah. And that you could see why Steve would want something more with this person. And then the way that they kind of shoot that, where she doesn't quite, you see her build up the confidence to tell this guy that she's gay and she's not sure how he's going to take it. And of course it's Steve Harrington. We like Steve. He's such a good guy.
Yeah.
Of course he like takes it
so well. And
fucks with her about it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like makes fun of the girl that she's crushing on.
Cindy's such a dud, you know? Yeah.
And it just, it warms her, because that's not something that necessarily would happen in a lot of shows.
Especially, well, they set it up like this 80s trope, like this beautiful girl that everyone thinks is a dork. Yeah. And like you take her glasses off and everybody's like, whoa,
you're working with Phoebe Cates at the ice cream store.
Yeah. Steve. Holy shit. And Dustin's like, you know, the whole season, he's like, the girl that you need is working with you, buddy. And no way. Not her. Yeah. And, you know, they set it up like that. Like it's going to be cheesy as fuck when they kiss at the end of this. And I loved that they subverted that with, mm-hmm. No. Whoa, no, I'm gay. You know, I think it's awesome. And she played that so well. Mm-hmm. And that whole sequence where they're, you know, under the influence of the truth serum, so well done. It's overdone. It's a trope, you know, and a lot of actors are very bad at acting like they're fucked up. And it's, you know, as somebody who unfortunately has done a lot of drugs, it's a little annoying, you know? And I thought they did a great job. Like Leo DiCaprio and Wolf of Wall Street good at making this like realistic, but funny, you know?
They have a good way to like acknowledge some of the unrealism that the show just has by virtue of what it is. So when I was talking before about all the divergent storylines that converge in season three, you know, the Scoops troupe has been doing all this crazy shit in the underground Russian base, and they know their way around, and they, Joyce and Hopper have made it there because they know that there's a machine down below that they need to destroy, and they're trying to figure out how to get there. And Dustin's like, oh, we can help you. We've already worked our way through there. We know our way to navigate through, and you know, you take care of like the badass stuff, and we'll be your eyes and ears down there. And he's just like, no, like, you're a child. I'm not going to take a child down below into this crazy Russian thing where you might get killed. Like, it would have been easy to be like, well, it's a badass kid and they just have to do it because of the situation that they're in and yada, yada, yada. But it was just a good moment of like, no, I am a responsible adult who is not going to put a child into harm's way. And, mm-hmm. and it's cool because in writing, it could be really easy to fall into the, well, I guess we got to do it. And, you know, so it's just good for there to occasionally be a come back to reality moment, even in something that is so far-fetched and fantastical, you know?
No, they do that. You're right. They're really good at, because throughout seasons two and three, they have to initiate new people into all this outlandish shit. And it's like, it's asking a lot of the viewer, a huge bit of the willing suspension of disbelief to absorb the main characters, to absorb this, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, Joyce is like, oh, the lights are talking to me. It's Will. And they're, well, you're fucking crazy. And then all of a sudden Jonathan's like, I think she's right. You know? And like, it's believable. And so that's a lot. And then in season two, you're like, okay, now we got to sit Max down and tell her all this shit in a way that the viewer can buy that she would believe it, you know? Mm-hmm. And they do. I do completely, you know? And then in season three, it's like Lucas's little sister. And you know what I mean? Like, we got to invite all these new people in. Yeah. And I assume there'll be more. But they do it in a way that's organic seeming, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's there's cracks in it, but it holds up. They're really good at that. For instance, Robin's attitude throughout the first half of season three, I think, is money. You know, she's, hey, there's more fucking little kids outside to hang out with you. You know what I mean? Like,
how many children are you friends with?
This is weird, you know, but they know that it is. And there's no good explanation for like, hey, we've actually all fought interdimensional monsters together. That's why we're so tight.
We have shared trauma.
But I think it's great. It's like a little in joke between the main characters and the viewers, and against the new characters. Mm-hmm. It's fun. Mm-hmm.
They're really good at establishing like a third party perspective. And yeah. Be like, look how crazy this is from a distance.
For sure. Well, let's get into some spoilery-ish stuff. Now, just to be clear, there will be no leaks or foreknowledge of any kind. By spoiler, we mean if you're trying to go in completely blind, we respect that. If we weren't doing this show, that's the way we would be doing it. That means no trailer, no bonus footage from the new season that's been released by Netflix. That kind of stuff. So that's what we're about to be talking about.
Yeah. If you want to go in completely cold, we are going to be talking about like, this is this character played by this person, that type, anything that the Duffer brothers have said about
Yes. The show in interviews is fair game. So if you want to go in completely blind, maybe skip it. But if you don't mind hearing minor details, spoilery stuff.
Kermit just joined us for a moment.
Like minor
Kermit, if we're going to do Stranger Things. Okay, spoilers coming now.
You are entering spoiler territory.
You're bullshit.
All right. So we actually know quite a bit more now since the last time even us three talked personally. My prediction was wrong about the way they were going to split up the two seasons. So everybody's aware that part one of season four is going to drop on May 27th with part two dropping on July 1st. But the first part is actually 7 episodes. Mm-hmm. And then the part two is only 2 episodes.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
When did this come out?
A couple days ago.
Yeah, yesterday. Okay. Yeah. And they also released the runtime for all the episodes as well.
They're super duper long. I did see that. We've known that they're well over an hour, but we've known that they're over an hour long each, but they're well over an hour.
The shortest one is 1 hour, 3 minutes.
Wow. Yep. That's episode 3. Yeah. So 1 hour and 16 minutes, 1 hour and 15, 1 hour 17. Episode 7 is 1.5 hours. Episode 8 is 1 hour 25. And then the finale is 2.5 hours long. So doing this show the way that we do it is going to be a nightmare. Yeah. Because even 1 hour and 16, episode 1, that's over 1/2 hour longer than what we're used to. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty much. So damn.
Yeah. This is going to be one hell of a week.
But I think we'll be more necessary than ever. You know what I mean? Like the recap culture is ripe with this season. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of stuff there to get through. People might get lost without us. You need us.
Yes.
Damn it. So yeah, that's what we're looking forward to in the two parts. So Annie Hoosel, now that we've seen the trailer, and I've only seen the trailer a couple times. I did watch that Duffer Brother breakdown that you sent me, but that was like a month ago.
Yeah, I watched it back then as well.
And then I did watch the 8 minutes of the first episode released by Netflix on YouTube, but only once. And apparently I fucked up watching it. I thought that was a whole different character. It's obviously 11 with some de-aging technology or perhaps full CGI. And anywho, so yeah, I didn't catch that at all. That recontextualizes everything.
Yeah, it was so funny. So we all three watched it separately, but at the same time. And Chris is like, you guys have seen it, right? And we're like, yeah. And Chris is like, okay, so that's definitely like 6, right?
New antagonist.
We're going to see a cool new antagonist, 6. And I'm like, hey. 6 died.
I took it like because the other doctor was in the room with 6. And then we 10, I think, had a power similar to 11's like
spying
ability. And all of a sudden he sees blood and chaos and then everything erupts. And I didn't catch the 6 is dead 2 line. And so I thought 6 was running around because the scene is shot weird the way that it actually is. Now that I know it's 11, it's weird. It's not as cool. I thought they were introducing a human antagonist and I was really excited about that. Like what if there was someone who had gone farther than Kali and has just gone completely insane, but with those powers, that's interesting to me, right? Mm-hmm. That's great. That's like the Magneto to 11's Xavier. You know what I mean? Great.
Charles.
But nay, it is just 11 is apparently a psycho child murderer. And oh, so, no.
And that's where I think that this is where my out there theories.
God, it's out there, man.
It's so out there.
But doesn't even make sense.
This is a flashback of 11 murdering all the other numbered children when she was like 6 years old or something. And it's weird to me to be all of a sudden say, oh, by the way, this character that you love also killed a lot of little kids, you know, way back in the day. I think that maybe.
Never stopped Anakin Skywalker.
And look how he turned out.
Yeah.
So I think that maybe, and this is out there, that it's a flashback, but it's a flashback to the Upside Down before it was all dark and horrible. So all we really know about the Upside Down is that it's the same as our world, just like the darker version of it.
It's like home.
Got all this, but so dark and empty.
Yeah.
There's all the same buildings. So why wouldn't there be all the same people too? And so maybe it was just like a multiverse thing. It's the exact same as us. Only this is a world where 11 went bad. And so she is terrible and awful, and she actually is the mind flayer.
but she's the mind flayer from another dimension. She destroys the world and everything around her, evolves into the things that we have come to see, and she is the overarching big bad of the Upside Down.
So what about the Night King character that we see in the trailer? Do you see that as Eleven?
I don't. I think that
Vecna.
If it was, what's the character's name?
Vecna.
If it's not just like a machination of hers, it's the only person that I could see it being would be like Dr. Brenner, but the Upside Down version of Dr. Brenner. So we haven't actually even said in this recording what we think or what happened in that recap, but it's a flashback. We see Dr. Brenner starting his morning and then going and doing some tests with number 10. Number 10 is practicing spying on people. He all of a sudden everybody starts dying, and then Dr. Brenner gets knocked out, wakes up, and we see that Eleven was the one that killed all these people. And that's so dark, and it'd be really interesting to me if he sees all that, and like he seems heartbroken and like, you monster, what did you do? But we cut away and it could be, holy shit, I did it, she's my weapon, let's go. And like now he like helps her develop those powers, makes him even more and more powerful, and like she could start to use him eventually or something. If Vecna is a human at all, it would be like him, I think. But I know that this theory is way out there, but it's so fun to me to think that their Upside Down used to be a normal place.
So are we combining our trailer coverage with the 8 minute? Because there's something I want to add on to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it deals more with the trailer than necessarily the 8 minute preview. Okay, so I think Andy's on the right track, but I have a different opinion of what is happening. So I think this, similar to what Andy's thinking, I think this season is going to start something similar to like an alternate reality, or maybe even alternate visions of the past induced by the main villain Vecna. Because that character, the name Vecna, is from an actual D&D character.
Of course.
Like that's an actual, he was like a Lich Queen or Witch, Lich Witch, is that what it's called? He's some character that has Sloppy some Joe. Sort of like wizard based like vision powers type things. And if you watch the trailer enough, there's the scene where Max is like, "Dear Billy," and it shows the headstone of like Billy, what's her last name, Hargrove?
I think so.
But in later in the trailer, there's a shot where Max is like floating like above the grave, and Steve and Dustin are there. But if you look at the headstone, it says William Hargrove. It's a different headstone.
So it initially said Billy and then it said William.
Yeah. So the name changes on the headstone in between those two shots for some reason. And obviously there's some supernatural shit happening with Max in the second one. So I'm wondering if there is some type of alternating either realities or alternating of visions happening. And maybe this could play into what's happening with Eleven, or it really is just her backstory. And this kind of explains why, you know, because you know how the Duffers do, they like to take irredeemable characters and make them somewhat more sympathetic. Maybe this is their way of saying, oh, you thought Dr. Brenner was this monster this whole time. No, he actually was a pretty caring, you know,
that's what was so dude. Compelling about this clip.
And
then is
all his kids are brutally murdered, and now he's just kind of an asshole to this other child that he knows is important and is like the key to what he wants scientifically, but he also kind of resents her in a way. And it's a very interesting relationship where he's trying to like nurture her in a way so that she doesn't go ape shit and kill everyone else, but also he kind of hates her because of what he did.
I think it just clicked for me. I think you're spot on. Dr. Brenner comes back season 4, like Andy predicted, in season 2 is actually working alongside against Vecna, right? So this is sort of a Magneto and Xavier team up. And in order to get the audience to buy that, they recontextualize Dr. Brenner with this opening scene and the way that you're saying. So all of that is just a bridge to what happens by mid season 1, where Dr. Brenner's back, but he's not the bad anymore. And I think that's my theory.
So Dr. Brenner's going to come back and they're going to have to work with him in order to try to stop Vecna.
Yes.
Okay.
In some way.
We talked about that.
That was your prediction in season two.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. And you and I talked on the phone the other day, and we talked about maybe needing to, like I said before, I still stand by that. I think that he's the American in Russia, that he's been working behind the scenes the whole time, sent them to Hawkins to go.
Yeah, that's things. We didn't get to talk about that earlier. Andy and I were talking about this on the phone. How the
phone?
Yeah, phone. How the fuck did the Russians know about the gate that was in Hawkins or anything about that unless Brenner is the one that's in Russia?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Who would tell them that, yeah, we opened a gate, there was a fucking Demogorgon, and so that actually the kids named it after a D&D guy. Don't worry about it.
And in the Lost Sister episode, there's the one guy from the lab that used the cattle prod that he's like, no, Brenner's alive. I can take you to him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I definitely think that that's him.
I kind of wonder if slightly different, because I do know there's going to be... So the Duffers have described this season as their kind of Game of Thrones-esque season where all the characters are far apart from each other, working and doing their own thing. So there's the Hawkins crew. There's the California crew, which is seemingly Mike, 11, and Will and Jonathan.
No, it's no, Mike's not there.
Yeah, he is. That's where he's at in the trailer with 11. He goes there to visit.
Like to visit? Okay.
At least he's there at some point.
He's visiting. Okay. Yeah. I just mean he didn't leave at the end of season 3.
Right. Yeah, you're correct. But at some point in the series, he goes to California to see them. I don't know if he's going to be there the whole time or if he just kind of is like, all right, see you next summer. And then he leaves, you know?
And Hawkins is who? Steve, Robin.
Steve, Robin, Nancy. Dustin, you know, the usual suspects. And then Joyce and Murray are going to Russia, seemingly to break out Hopper or something. Seemingly. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, because we need fucking Joyce to do that job.
But I have a theory.
He's in Russia.
I have a theory. So there's that scene where Paul Reiser's back as Dr. Owens. And yeah. He's making a plea to 11. Like, we're at war. We need your help. I think that there is intergovernment struggle. So, like, there's the good government, which is...
Paul Reiser.
And then there's the more Dr. Brenner influenced bad government that is still trying to use this power for evil. And the war he's talking about, you think watching the trailer, the war is with the Upside Down, but really it's a war between these two agencies or with Russia. And maybe Dr. Brenner is back and he's somehow leading this charge of the quote unquote bad part of the US government to try to get 11 again and stop her. And maybe this is the setup of like, that fucking bitch,
she's got a terrible wound.
She is just a terrible wound. Did you see what she did to 10? He was my favorite.
He was such a good boy.
He read his books at night his and I could just... Ball. He loved his magical 8-ball. I would always say, hey, I would ask him questions like, what's your favorite color? And he would say, signs point to yes. And I would say, doesn't apply.
I love that my Matthew Modine impersonations are always like, good news, everyone. From Futurama. Yeah, that's some good predicts coming out here, boys. Good predicts.
They might need to go to Dr. Brenner for help to get Eleven's powers back.
That would be gross, though. About. You had talked about that, and we both agree that would be gross.
It would be gross, but it's possible. Like, we got a powerless 11 right now. What if she never gets them back?
It's definitely not going to happen.
I know, but
I was actually about to say, can we all talk about how awesome it's going to be? Because you know what they're going to do. It's going to be a 1-4 episode build up, and then at a crucial moment, she'll get her powers back. And even though we've seen it 1,000 times, it'll be like the very first time and we'll go, fuck yes. Like when she lifted the van in season one, you know, or broke the Troy's little
arm,
bastard arm.
Yeah. Or the squirrel. She shot the squirrel across the woods
in season two.
Yeah. It's like, fuck.
Yeah.
That was dope.
Yeah. That, my wife exclaimed like, wow, that's unnecessary. Yeah. So when she gets her powers back, it'll be really cool. I mean, it's like excited for that in advance.
You're excited for a trope. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that shit, man. It's like all is lost, you know, Dark Night of the Soul. And I'm just really excited for the inevitable rise.
Yeah.
But I also have heard from the Duffers, I believe, that season four is very Max heavy.
They reached out.
Yeah, they called me and said, hey, Chris, man, we know you're really concerned, but don't worry. I know you're a big fan of Sadie Sink.
All the Max.
Hey, buddy,
you could ever want.
Fear Street 1978 is the best one. And we got a surprise for you, buddy. This is really Max heavy episode, which I am excited about it, for reasons I just alluded to. I think Sadie Sink, since Stranger Things 3 has gone off the air, I've realized what a strong actor she is. And I think that there is a lot there to her character. And I'm really excited. Also, Maya Hawke, really excited to see what Robin does in Stranger Things 4. And
my new prediction is at some point Max gets powers.
It appears that way.
Yeah. Based on the trailer, at least maybe not like, you know, permanent powers. Maybe she just has them for like a hot spell. Cause I think there's going to be a real heavy tie between her and the Vecna character. It seems like she's going to be the one that's tied to that character most.
In the way that Will has been tied to the Upside Down.
Yeah.
Sounds like Max is
going to
turn dark.
What do you think they're going to do?
A Mad Max, you'd say?
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people think. And I that's possible, but I think that would be a grave mistake because that family, just goddamn, you know what I mean? Can anyone in that family just be happy? We're just going to beat the shit out of your whole childhood and then write a bunch of monsters to tear you apart. You know, like I think from a writing perspective, Max needs to survive this. But that's just me. But it looks like that way, you know, she's obviously floating.
You could give her family an opportunity to overcome it, you know, and her name doesn't start with a B, so she's fine.
Yeah, you would think, but then Alexi didn't fare well. She is really far away from B in the alphabet, though. So that she's got that going for it.
Yeah, Alexi was a little too close to the sun on that one.
Hey, man, you're right next to B there, buddy. You got to go. Should have stuck with Smirnoff.
Fucked, bro.
Hopper tried to save you. Yeah, we're A and C. If anybody didn't get that.
Yeah, the Duffers have like said that this. The Duffers have said this season is going to be their like horror season. I thought it was interesting. They described season three, their summer blockbuster season, which was something we had never heard of. I remember at the time.
That's where they got the most money, you know, and
because they were saying season three is the weirdest season, but it wasn't like, no, it's our summer blockbuster season.
They started in retrospect calling it their blockbuster season, which I saw it watching it. You know, you get the Mind Flayers, this huge monster who's free in the, you know, in the reality that we know.
It takes place in summer.
Yeah, true.
I saw some blocks get busted for sure.
And there's a lot of like slasher and Hellraiser influences for season four, right?
Yeah, so the Vecna character,
some pretty brutal movies.
They said specifically they wanted to make like a Freddy Krueger or a Pinhead.
And Robert Englund plays the Vecna, right?
He plays Victor Creel, who is the old man who owns that haunted house. That is the Creel house.
I've seen the trailer once long ago, so
I don't know if he plays Vecna. There is actually a really big theory online that the Vecna character is actually Billy, but I think it's Robert Englund. Because why would you get Robert Englund and not have him be the creepy, scary monster man?
Yeah.
Fun story. I learned in an interview with the Duffers, they were saying that Robert Englund, and if you don't know, he's the guy who plays Freddy Krueger in the original Krueger films.
All of them, right?
Not the remake.
Oh, yeah, that was Jackie
Earl Haley, yeah. But he was the original Freddy Krueger. He was the OG. He actually is the one that approached the Duffers and was like, hey, I really want to be in Stranger Things, not knowing that they were specifically writing this character influenced by Freddy Krueger.
Oh, that's cool.
And so they were like, yes, yeah, please be on our show, Robert Englund.
Right.
How cool is that?
But yeah, there's a big theory that the Vecna character is like an reanimated Billy's dead body, but I think it's going to be this Victor Creel character that's just been kind of consumed by the force of Vecna.
I've heard that, and I really hope that they're wrong. That's terrible. Yeah. It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
And I also heard a big TikTok creator talk about, I know you guys all think it's Billy, but I think it's Max. And she's got blue eyes, and so does Vecna. No other characters do, was his like biggest piece of evidence. And this is like, I'm not trying to be dismissive here, but there's this like culture of breaking down Marvel trailers and that are way off, and people have a lot of fun with that. And God love them, you know. It's just not my thing.
Mephisto's coming, guys.
Like I think Mephisto is Vecna, you know, at this point. But again, for the same reason I said earlier, if anything like that were true, it would be terrible. And I trust the Duffers way too much to do that to Max. But we'll see.
In their hands, they could do that to Max and do it the right way.
How can you have that character end up just like the rest of her family with zero resolve
like in the right way? If she overcomes it.
Come back?
No, well, are you saying like have it happen to her, like have her die?
Well, I would assume if she became Vecna, then she would die.
Well, maybe.
It'd be terrible.
I don't think that she's Vecna. There's
no, I know that you're not that, saying that.
That is terrible. It's the dumbest shit I ever heard. you were nice to that guy. That guy can...
Andy always goes on. Beat his ass.
Guys, what if he's right? Here's the thing. A Monopoly game spoiled season 4. Like, it came out like a week or two ago, and it spoils the season. And they're out there. Like,
oh,
factual,
shit.
This stuff definitely happens. I don't know how much of it spoils. But the Duffer brothers are pissed. And now there's also the culture of people that would read those spoilers and then make predictions and dance around the fact that they actually know for sure something's going to happen. So for all we know, that dude read the Monopoly cards, get out of jail free. Also, Max is Vecna. You
know, like, that's a weird Monopoly game.
Andy, what are all those board games behind you?
So anyway,
speaking of Vecna, I do think it's cool that like they were saying they hired the makeup guy from Chernobyl, and he's the guy who designed the Night King. Like, he did all the prosthetics.
Yes, I did know it's the same guy who did the Night King, which is why he kind of looks like the Night King to me.
Yeah, and they hired him specifically because they were impressed with the prosthetic work in Chernobyl, like the radiation.
Dude, that shit's amazing.
And apparently, like, the villain's like 90% practical, and of course they add like the CGI vines that seem to be holding him up, but like the body itself is like mostly practical.
Like, how could you not be excited for this? Every one of these episodes cost over $30 million.
Jesus.
This is 9 feature-length films pretty much of Stranger Things. Like, this is gonna, as Steve says, lick tits.
It's gonna lick tits, baby.
They went soup to nuts on this one.
It's not gonna pull out.
It's not.
Mm-mm. no sir. Did you guys hear about the game in the trailer?
No.
The mystery of the trailer?
Did not.
So I didn't know about this. I was just kind of going down a rabbit hole trying to like figure out, you know, some stuff that the trailer brought to us. Like, I was listening to interviews with Duffers, and someone's like, oh yeah, there's a secret code in the trailer. People are trying to crack it. So I looked into it, and it's fucking incredible. So there is a single frame. I think it's in like 1:59 of that trailer. There's a frame. It looks like nonsense. It looks like a bunch of like portals. There's like, I think 4 of them, but for a single frame, those portals have timestamps on them.
Huh.
And the timestamps are 32 seconds, 52 seconds, 1:46 and 2:30. And if you go to those freeze frames of the time frame, there's text on screen, whether it be like, you know, the Hellfire Club t-shirt or, you know, just a random sign that's an exterior shot. But if you take those shots and overlay them on the original portal shots, and you kind of edit them so that the 32-second
The word that was in 32 seconds is on that. Yeah.
Yeah. It spells out, I am Hell's Master. And so a lot of people are like, well, what does that mean? I am Hell's Master. Well, someone was like, why don't we add .com at the end of it? So if you go to iamhellsmaster.com, that brings up a light bright puzzle. Do you remember light brights?
Yeah.
So it's just like, it's a digital light bright
boards,
and you've got different colored pegs, and you can, you know, pop them in, and there's like it looks like post-it notes with numbers on the side. And if you follow the post-it note directions, you'll create like an upside down heart. And then that opens a giant portal. And it's like, congrats, you solved this puzzle. The rest of it will come out in July.
Damn, that's a lot of work just to get to the dud.
So like, I will, I don't know. I thought I saved the photos. I'm sorry. I did take screen grabs of
like the work.
Oh yeah, it's right here. So this is the, I'm showing you, I'll post this all online, but that is the different portals.
Oh, okay.
And someone has superimposed the words up there.
Okay.
And then like, these are just the individual frames from those timestamps I mentioned. That's what they're pulling from. And then that takes you to the website and
IamHellsMaster.com.
This is the lightbright.org.
Just a nut sack. It's an upside down heart.
Yeah, Steve's like, upside down heart. Oh, you sweet summer child. Those are balls. The Duffer brothers just hit the entire world at once with these nuts.
Oh my God.
In a really labyrinthine way.
They did. But yeah, so apparently there's going to be like more to this mystery in July, but I didn't, that was something that I would not have noticed had I not done research for the show. And I was like, oh, this is kind of a cool little, I mean, I didn't solve that problem. It was right. All like, I followed other people's stuff on Reddit.
This is becoming a thing. Like, they're really trying to outwit the nerds. This is off topic a little bit, but I just watched season 3 of Love, Death and Robots. And
I forgot that was dropping.
There's a QR code at the end of episode 9, and I scanned it, and it took me to an NFT screenshot of the episode. And
asked you for $200.
There's a QR code in every single episode hidden, and I was only able to find the two of them, the one at the end of episode 1 and the one at the end of episode 9. The only two that are in the credits I found, quote unquote found, but I couldn't find them in any of the other episodes. I stayed up for like an hour rewatching them and scanning through the frames and stuff. And just for, I'm not an NFT guy, but I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
And they're really like cool pictures of the, by the way, episode 9, Yibaro, is the best Love, Death, Robots episode ever. It was fucking incredible.
I have to watch that.
So any hoozle.
Do you guys want to touch on our old predictions and see if we stand by them?
Yes. Sure.
So we kind of briefly talked about Hopper still being alive and Dr. Brenner being the American. But Andy, I think you're pretty spot on with this prediction. You said that this show was not going to take place mostly in Hawkins.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, obviously, there's going to be a big group of people in Hawkins, but I think you're right. Where 2/3 of the show is going to be somewhere not in Hawkins, right? Yeah.
That town has seen enough. Leave them be.
Leave Hawkins alone.
Hawkins is the Hargroves of America.
The Britney Spears of America.
Andy also predicted that something that happens in this season will result in why Chernobyl happens, because this is the same year that Chernobyl happens.
Oh, God.
Yeah, 1986 is when Chernobyl happened.
Are we confirmed that this is set in 1986? Did the delay in production change things at all?
I think in the trailer breakdown, the Duffer said that at least the beginning of the season picks up 6 months after the end of season 3, whatever. 3. Yeah, I can't do numbers.
Yeah, numbers are tough, man. I get it.
What comes after, what comes
before. Well, the 8 minutes is 1979, but.
Yeah. There was one, I don't know exactly the context, but I know one of them definitely said 6 months after season 3.
Maybe no, I'm not sure I stand by that anymore.
Andy famously also said that they're going to make it a point to have the characters not smoke as much because of Netflix's anti-smoking stance, but also there was some sort of law that was created.
In 1986, you weren't allowed to smoke on public transit anymore.
Yeah, that was it. And you were saying that like Hopper, like, oh, I can't smoke on the bus anymore. God damn. You know, as Hopper sounds.
Yeah. my famous impressions.
And this may be Andy's hottest take. This is Andy's hottest take by a mile. And he says that in season 4, there will be a sacrifice / redemption arc for none other than Ted Wheeler.
Stand by it. That's awesome. I forgot I made that prediction. I thought of that the other day. Like, God, they really just do him dirty. He's trying his best. And so, yeah, I stand by it. The sacrifice of Ted.
Karen needs to leave Ted.
Take that shit to the bank.
I'm not saying Ted's a bad guy. Ted's not for Karen.
I agree.
He can find another dud chick out there that wants to just watch TV. Right. He's a good dad to Holly.
Yeah, he is a good dad.
By letting Holly sit on you while you sleep is father, you know, fatherhood, then yes.
Yeah. We also predicted like celebrity cameos that would come out.
Yeah, we were all. I don't think any of us said Robert Englund.
None of us said Robert Englund. In fact, I'm just going to read Andy's because one of his is fucking depressing.
Oh, no.
You suggested Peter Billingsley, who's the kid from A Christmas Story.
Okay.
But then your other one was Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, no.
So obviously that's wrong. Chris suggested Fred Savage, Mark Hamill, Molly Ringwald, which I still think are all really solid bets.
They could all still happen, right?
Yeah.
Because I was talking to Andy about this. They almost always have two 80s stars. In season one, we got Matthew Modine and Winona Ryder. In season two, we got Paul Reiser and Sean Astin. In season three, I think we got no one, which is weird.
Season three also, we didn't mention this before, but season three is also never takes place in the Upside Down.
True. Yeah, true. Well, there's no open gate, except it's like a sliver. The Demogussy is opening slightly.
Ew. And then, Chris, you predicted that this season would take place around Christmas. Don't know if that's going to happen.
It looks like not.
Signs point to no. But it could be California Christmas. We don't know.
Is that a little eight Magic 8-Ball reference there? That was pretty good.
Yeah.
I didn't intend for it to be, but yeah. And then also you said that there would be a Pretty in Pink moment for Eleven in the season. I think you were meaning that she would be adjusting to life as a normal girl and she would have a Pretty in Pink moment where she would I'm going to be a real girl. That type of thing.
I don't even remember why I said that, but I stand by that. There's going to be at least a couple episodes, which we now know is hours of her without her powers adjusting to, you know, some normalcy. And it could be Kali that gets her powers back with her, perhaps. It also could be Kali. Holy shit.
Kali's Vecna.
No. But causing these reality shifts, obviously that's her power.
Oh.
To make Max float, to make the headstone change or whatever, right? Like,
you're right. That is her power. It's the power of perception.
Mm-hmm.
Perception is king.
Yeah.
King Kali.
Period. Did I do that right?
I don't know.
No, I don't know.
I'm not on TikTok enough.
Period. You did it again. I have some new predictions. Not really. I don't know why I just segued like that. That's not at all what I'm saying. I don't know.
Friends,
actually, the show's over.
Yeah, bye. So I wanted to throw out something else from Andy and I's discussion as a question. So I feel like they have a Will problem because in season one, obviously Will was sidelined. Season two, we found out Noah Schnapp is an incredible actor. And, but it also kind of felt cruel that he was the center of the torture again, right? In season three, the Will problem came to a head because they knew they couldn't do that again, but they didn't know what the fuck to do with him. So he's just kind of like stuck in this weird, you know, F plot where he hasn't quite grown up as fast as the other kids and they all have girlfriends. And Andy said,
I feel so bad for Will in that season.
I took it as an underdeveloped teen, of which there are some, right? And Steve, I think you identified with that and I remember listening to the show again. You talked about how you were a little bit, you know, not underdeveloped. That's a weird word to say.
I was behind
to say
the times.
Your face. Yeah. You were like, hey, what's up? I thought we were all friends, guys, you know, and everybody was clicky and you were sad and skipped school a lot because of it. But Andy was like ahead of the interpretation that he thinks Will's gay and that's where they're
actually,
going.
I think that's a very, I think I 100% agree with you on that, Andy.
Which, the more that I think about it, and if we're talking to Andy, I'm leaning that way. My question is, what do you think that Will's place in the story is going to be in season four?
Interesting. Okay. So Will's now out in California. Fuck, that's really hard to answer. So I think that it's going to be a lot of like Will discovering himself, maybe even like, you know, obviously he's going to be out there making new friends and maybe, you know, exploring his sexuality a little bit. I don't know how far the Duffers would want to go with that. But like the Robert Englund guy, I'm guessing that he's in California. Seems like a California type of guy to run into. And so maybe Will's the one that like discovers that, because I think that he's going to be out there like becoming a new person, you know?
Right. You mean like the creepy old Victor Creel guy?
Yeah.
That's a Hawkins person. For
is
sure.
It really?
Yeah, because okay. In the trailer, you see the Hawkins crew going into the Creel house.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I don't know, honestly. There is still kind of a Will problem. He is the zombie boy, but
I don't know. Maybe he'll like develop some. He still has the tingle, right?
The Willy tingle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they need to actualize him. They need some, you know, maybe not come out, but at least to himself, if he is gay, in fact, and mm-hmm. make that a thing. My theory, though, is that because he's in California now, right?
Yes.
A lot more gay people in California than Hawkins, Indiana.
In the 80s, for sure.
So I think, just in general, coastal populated cities are more.
At least outed.
People. Yeah, they're more tolerant. Yeah. So I think that this could be a good time for Will to become whoever he's going to be.
The wise
and throw the green fireballs. And I think, yeah, if that is true, it's going to come out. No pun intended, this season.
Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know what they're going to do with Will. I hope they find something for him. The one thing I really hope happens, and that I'm actually really excited for the possibility of happening, is Will and Eleven really working together.
Yeah.
Because we really haven't gotten a lot of Will and Eleven, even though they're the two that they should have the most in common out of sure. all of them, right? Because they have.
Yeah, I hope that Eleven dumps Mike's ass again.
I dump your ass.
By the way, here, okay, another hot take. Prediction. Eleven will learn to speak this year because it's starting to get really fucking weird and yeah. make me think that Millie Bobby Brown can't act when it's not her fault. Probably they're just writing her like she's five still, because in season two, they had this unique issue of like, okay, with her upbringing, she's probably still a little rough around the edges. Hop's teaching her words. So what's the word? Compromise.
Halfway happy.
Yeah. Halfway happy. That was cute. I understood that. But in season three, it becomes taxing, you know. I dump your ass, you
dump
know
your ass.
And that's, it was cute, but like, at what point is she just gonna assimilate, you know?
Well, now it seems like she's gonna be in an actual high school, which, God help her.
Yeah, right.
Well, now she's gonna be a valley girl, is what's hysterical. She can talk and we're gonna wish she did.
Like, oh, totally. My
God. Like, that's what we're gonna get, and I'm sad.
It's gonna be Clueless.
I don't know if we'll get that. I feel like those girls are going to shun her because she's different.
For sure.
She's like, gonna, I don't, your ass.
Mouth breathers.
I don't think that she's actually going to turn
into a mouth breather. Wait till she gets her powers back and she brutally murders all of them. I do this, you know.
I do hope she dumps Mike's ass, because that was one thing we didn't mention it, but in this most recent rewatch, is I was just constantly thinking, is there a more miserable human being than Mike fucking Wheeler?
Yeah, like Lucas is awesome. He, you know, he's hapless. Dustin's goofy as shit.
We love Dustin.
He's fine. Will's great. Of all the people, I'd be most likely to hang out with Will and play D&D. You know what I mean? Listen to some
fucking Clash.
Yes, I was about to say that because I'm not an embarrassingly stupid person.
Jefferson Starship. That's a throwback to 2017.
Second. I think that wraps everything up, right?
Yeah.
All right.
We have one last bit of business.
Mad Lib. It's going to be a treat to me every episode. The Mad Lib.
You guys didn't think we were going to find out the story of the Hawkins Middle AV Club, did you?
All right.
Are you guys ready to find out what...
Founded by Bob Newby.
So ready.
R.I.P. Yep. R.I.P. Bob Newby, superhero. Okay, here we go. Testing. 127. Hey, you. Yes, you. Want to get your phalanges on the latest flower equipment?
Oh, my God.
Does the thought of using a Heathkit Tire Shack radio thrill you? Interested in squirting out with some of Hawkins' finest wheelbarrows? Then AZ Club is the club for you. Cry on down to room 11 on Wednesdays after the table rings. What? That didn't work out. See President Andrew Wheeler for any questions, or come find me, your plentiful science teacher, Mr. Clark, who can get it, in my classroom after crayons. Remember, curiosity is the switching at... What? That doesn't make sense. Remember, curiosity is switching at the door. Will you open it? Sign up sheet is for interested wolves only. Only colorful doodles, unkind messages.
That's the crayons.
Oh, there you go. Any colorful doodles, unkind messages, or fake names such as Joe Mama or Steven Butts will result in after purgatory detention. End scene.
Damn.
Beautiful.
Squirting after the wheelbarrows.
And that flower equipment with your phalanges.
You want to get your phalanges on some flower
equipment? No. Well, tune in soon, guys, because we are, as you listen to this, 4.5 days away from staying up all night watching Top Gun and then Stranger Things. And so I assume the episodes will be dropping periodically all weekend, you know, various recaps. And so you can keep up, take a break from the actual show, listen to our show. And if you want to become a Patreon subscriber, you can see our take on Kenobi and Top Gun Maverick and listen to our super secret, wonderful Stranger Things trivia game.
It's going to be great.
That Steve has been working on so hard for the last couple weeks. So tune in for that at patreon.com/streamingthings. God damn it.
Yeah. And if you are a Patreon member, a poll went out last night. So make sure you complete that poll.
Vote on the poll. Vote the poll. Anywhoozle, that's all the time we have this week. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this has been Streaming Things. Happy streaming. Hello?
Hello. Is this Christopher and Andrew?
It is. Welcome, Dr. Brenner.
It's been so long. And not long enough.
Well, okay. But we're glad to have you back on the show. And you know, as I wrote to you, I would very much like you to help thank our patrons with us. Would you be willing to do that?
I suppose so. Is this for science?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And it might result in
it keeps the lights deaths. On.
I've worked in a place where the lights flicker constantly, so I can empathize with you. So let's keep these lights on. You don't want to have a child kill everything you love.
That's true.
These people give you money?
Yeah, unbelievably so, but yes.
Shocking.
And there's more than 10 of them. I know you don't like the number 10. It makes you very sad.
I just gotta chill. Well, let's get this over with. I would like to thank, first off, is Phil. Thank you so much for your donation. I really would love to experiment all up on your body. Thank you, Carmelita. You sound very cultured and cool. I'd read some fancy journals with you. Thank you, Carrie. Thank you so much for your support, Carrie. You really have to tell me why you listen to this show, because these two jabronis, I said jabronis, me, Dr. Brenner.
Yeah, that's how he talks. I mean, you talk.
Thank you, Enza. I really need to start experimenting on foreigners to see if your soil and foods that you eat are different than the children that I experiment on here. What do they even eat over there?
Quinoa.
Waffles?
Yes, for sure.
Peas. I like peas. Speaking of food, thank you, Cake.
Yes, thank you, Cake.
We're thanking a cake now, okay. Thank you, Katie. Thank you so much. Daniel, I really appreciate all the hard work you do. Presumably, whatever you do at work. Thank you, Jimmy, so much. Wasn't he on the show once?
He was once.
And now he pays you money?
Mm-hmm. That's how we get him. We need to get more guests.
Maybe I should try that and getting kids. I can be like, I'm on a podcast. You want to be on, young child? We'll call it, I Will Fuck With Your Head.
The White Van.
the White Van. Andrew, I need to get you on my marketing team at the energy of the Department of Energy. Thank you, Sarah, so much for all of the kind things that you say, supposedly, to these people. Thank you, E. Lopez, but there's a note here that says I should say Elo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's requested.
Okay, well, thank you, Kyle. Thank you so much for all your work. I knew a Kyle once. I killed him. Thank you, Thomas.
It's Thomas.
I'm sorry, what?
It's Thomas. Yeah, the H is not silent. We've discussed
Is that like
this.
A Bunsen burner that you use for science?
It's a very common name.
Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
The 80s are wild.
Yes.
Thank you, Shay. Are you okay, son? You need me to get up my...
No, I don't need your doctor services.
I have a thing.
No, thank you.
It's in the van. It's
several, not going out there.
Several pills. It'll fuck you up. Thank you, Stephen V, so much for all the interactions you have with the show. And thank you, A. Wells. You are a terrible wound. And it needs to be fixed. This terrible, terrible wound in my heart. I miss Ted so much.
I know. I know you're sad. But thank you for stopping in. And more importantly, thank you to all of our patrons who help keep the lights on. Metaphorically, it's not enough money to pay the bills.
I'm going to take those pills.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.